When the movie Jaws first opened, it created a sensation. And shark sightings increased by the thousands in all the vast and unknown depths of the ocean. How could there have been only one? Now, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, the legend continues.
Chief Brody, can we go, please?
I think we may have another shark problem. Are you serious?
Look at this. That's a shark.
You started a panic on a public beach. Now, what if somebody decides to sue us? That's a shark. Did you ever stop to think about that?
And I know what a shark looks like because I've seen one up close. You better do something about this one because I don't intend to go through that hell again.
Don't press it this time.
Mike is out there.
Is a boy is dead and my son and husband is still out there.
Get me out!
None of man's fantasies of evil can compare with the reality of Jaws 2. See it before you go back in the water.
And welcome to Unloved Sequels, the podcast that brings you a blow-by-blow critique of Hollywood's worst-rated sequels. You know, the ones that some people think should never have been made. We're your hosts, Michael. Say hello.
Hello.
And I'm Claire. This episode, we're going to need a bigger boat, just when we thought it was safe to go back in the water. Michael, in case anyone hasn't worked it out yet, what's the movie?
This time we are talking about Jaws 2. So Yay. It takes place years after the shark attacks that left Amity Island in ruins. Chief Brody's discovered a new shark preying on the summer folk of the island and a bunch of horny teenagers. It was released on June the 16th, 1978, and it had a nationwide release, what was quite weird back then for a film of such a scale to get released everywhere straight away. They usually back then, instead of making lots of recordings, they would release films in major cities and towns, and then once they finished watching the movie, they would spread them out into smaller cities
and
across.
And move it onto the smaller towns.
Because then they wouldn't have to worry about producing too many reels of the same movie.
And
So this is where it saved money. But because they had all their eggs in the basket for this movie, should I say, they made thousands of reels for this and sent it to every movie theatre in America and across the world.
And how did that work out for them?
Do you know what? Quite well, not as well as Jaws, obviously, but it did really well. It was given a budget of about 30 million. So it had a really high budget back then.
What I read when I was looking into this, sorry to butt in on your thing, was that they didn't actually have a budget set.
No.
Because they knew that whatever they asked for, they'd get told no. They just went, well, look, the original movie made a ton of money, so we're just going to spend as much of it as we need to.
Yeah, I read a couple of places. They kind of like just spent the overlying profit they made once they're taken away from all the advertising and all the distribution, everything they made from the first movie, the baseline profit they made, they just spent on the budget on this movie. So the budget was 30 million. That's probably roughly about 120 in today's money, should I say. So that was the most expensive film that Universal Pictures had made at that time and second most expensive film of 1978 after the original Superman with Christopher Reeves. It went on to make 208 million. Adjusted for inflation, that's $940 million in today's money. So that's like Marvel cash. That's like comic book movie money. And a movie about a shark today would not make that kind of buck. It entered seventh at the box office in 1978. So we're about to do Claire's favourite part of the podcast when we talk about what came out that year. So the biggest grossing movie of that year is quite a hot topic at the moment, Grease. Grease was the highest grossing movie of that year.
Of course.
So with the passing of Olivia Newton-John, it seems quite appropriate.
Oh,
other movies that year came out. We have Superman. We have National Lampoon's Animal House. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That was the reason Spielberg was with us. A film that I've never heard of called Every Which Way But Loose. Now, I know what kind of title that sounds like. No, have you heard of this movie?
No, it's not one of those movies. I've heard of it. I haven't seen it. And to be honest, having been all smug and, oh, have you never heard of that? I can't tell you a single thing about it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah, no, I've never heard about it. Another movie that's quite, I've only seen recently because it came up within the Wonder Woman 1984 film, was Heaven Can't Wait. Saturday Night Fever, Lord of the Rings, the animated feature that we all got forced to watch at primary school. That's how old that film is. Damien Omen 2, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Deer Hunter.
Oh, I love that film.
The original Halloween, that's coming to an end this year with Halloween Ends. And Revenge of the Pink Panther. So that
also
was quite...
love that film.
Yeah, you're a big Pink Panther fan, aren't you?
I love it. So that's quite a punchy year, but it's also quite a spooky year. There's a lot of high tension films in there.
This movie at the moment rates, it's a 217th biggest grossing sequel of all time out of 1,459 sequels ever made.
I mean, so that's pretty good.
That is pretty good for a film that, you know, some people would think
considering
should not be made.
How early in the movie industry and certainly in the sequels bit of the movie industry this film came out to still be holding that place.
Yeah.
When these days it's just sequels.
Exactly. And then
that's quite impressive.
It was this always makes me laugh because a lot of Jaws 2 websites and fan sites and blogs always quote this little fact that fascinates me. They always say it was the highest grossing sequel of all time until Rocky 2 came out. And I was like, really? How long did it hold on to this?
Rocky 2 came out like 2 weeks later or something, wasn't it?
It was the following year. I always find it like, okay, that's something to hold on for, but holding on to a crown for 12 months, is that something to boast about, really? So
At the time.
Yeah.
You know.
But this movie didn't make us like nowhere near the bucks that Jaws made. And this only took probably half or less than half what the original movie did. But that was more than sequels made back then. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know...
Yeah. And I think you have to take into account as well that Jaws was like nothing anyone had ever seen before.
No, exactly.
And so it was always going to stand out from the crowd and it was always going to stood out from the crowd because it not only was nothing like that been made before... It's not something you can replicate because it's been done now. And it's a completely unique movie in that respect. She says, as we're about to talk about one of its many sequels.
But like with Jaws, it was made as a B movie. They thought it wouldn't make that much money. You know, they bought a book. The producers of it bought the book before the book was even released. Like that was a complete shot in the dark. They had no idea the impact that was going to have. And I think, can you imagine reading Jaws in 1974 or 1975 before the movie came out, reading this book and going, I want to make a movie of this. Like, how the hell would you tackle that shark stuff when that technology didn't exist and they had to build this shark? Like, nothing's ever been done like that before that.
Yeah.
It's just watching Jaws now, it's mind-blowing and it still holds up today. You can see, you know...
Absolutely holds up.
And that's the thing what fascinates me. Like, as the Jaws sequels went on, for some reason, the shark looks worse as the movies go on. So, like, two, you're like, all right, it's a plastic shark. Three and four, you're like, oh, what are they doing in these movies? But, like, the first...
Well, I think a big part of that, though, is that they kept... You didn't see the shark in the first movie.
Well, the shark didn't work.
You saw little snippets or you had the shark's point of view and it built that tension. And so because you see the shark for so little of the movie, when you see it, it's really impressive.
Yeah.
Whereas in Jaws 2, and obviously that's not something they could try and do again because you can only do that once.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's just a rehash and it's not going to work. So they kind of went the opposite way with this. And they were like, OK, well, let's get that shark out there from the beginning. And because you see the shark quite a lot, by the end of it, you are a bit like, that eye is just a bead.
Yeah.
That they've stuck on with glue. That was my big observation of the final scene, was like, it looked fine to me up until that final scene. Then I was like, that doesn't look anything like an eye of any creature that ever lived. No, that is just half a ping pong ball painted black and stuck on.
This shark does seem a little bit more squishier, but I think
like all of us a few years later.
Exactly. But I think that, like, just think, thank God Spielberg couldn't get that shark to work. Because if he got that shark to work, we would have ended up something like Jaws 2, where there's a lot of the shark. Because the shark didn't work, they became creative on how to film that film. So I don't think you would have had this groundbreaking movie if that shark worked in the first place. But we need to step away from Jaws, because we can probably talk about Jaws for a very long time. But our podcast is called Unloved Sequels. So Claire, do you have any behind the scenes stuff for us?
I do. So Jaws 2. So the original Jaws, as you said, came out in 1975. The sequel came out in 1978. Our three main players are back. We've got Roy Scheider, we've got Lorraine Gary, and we've got Murray Hamilton back in our three main roles as Chief Brody, Ellen Brody, and Mayor Vaughan. Also returning from the original movie is John Williams doing the composition, which is absolutely on point as always. And then we've got our producers, David Brown and Richard Z. Zanuck, are back as producers on this movie, having produced the first movie. Now, it's worth noting, Roy Scheider did not want to make this movie. He didn't want to be in the sequel. Basically, he got, I think blackmailed is maybe a harsh word to use, but it
well, he was under
something
contract.
Very close to blackmail.
He was under contract to make three or four movies for Universal, didn't he? And they kind of like...
Yes, he was in contract, and then he walked off production of The Deer Hunter, and they basically said to him, if you want to get away with walking off The Deer Hunter, you're going to make Jaws 2. But they said that, like, and this will wrap up your contract.
Yeah, he counted Jaws 2 as two movies, didn't it? So there was
was the last two movies of his contract. So he basically made it under duress. I don't think he enjoyed the experience very much. I don't think he was particularly pleasant on set a lot of the time. He got on really badly with the new director, who I'm going to talk about briefly in a minute. So yeah, he basically did it because he had to. Interestingly though, he was paid $400,000 for it, which at the time was big money, and was four times what he got paid for the original film.
That's crazy.
Which is quite impressive. And considering, I mean, he is billed as the lead in this movie, I actually think, and again, we'll talk about this, I think, a bit later, to an extent, I think that the previous generation of leads are almost supporting characters in this movie.
Yes, for me. I agree.
I think this is very much like the next generation of this. For me, this movie is much more about the teens than it is about the adults.
Yes.
So to have such a big increase in salary when he's had quite a reduction in screen time, I think it's fair. I didn't count the minutes, but I think he was on screen for less time. So yeah, fair play to him. Similarly, David Brown and Richard D. Zanuck were not really that fussed about producing the sequel, but the studio wanted the sequel and they wanted to turn it around quickly after the original. And they basically signed on because they didn't want anyone else to make it.
Exactly.
They didn't particularly want to make it, but they just didn't want someone else.
Someone to
I
take
guess maybe
their
they still felt the ownership. Yeah. Exactly. So that's why we had them back. Spielberg did not return for this movie. He had said not long after the original movie, he said he's not really keen on sequels at all as a concept.
He's changed his mind in the last couple of years, hasn't he? He chums them out all the time now.
Yeah. But back in 1975, he wasn't that keen on the idea of sequels. He certainly wasn't that keen on the idea of going back and filming under the conditions that they had to film Jaws under, because filming at sea is less fun than filming on land, it would seem, and that kind of seems logical. So he declined to direct. Originally, John D. Hancock was brought in to direct the movie, and his wife, Dorothy Tristan, was co-writing. They I think they worked on the movie for about 18 months, I think.
Well,
and produced some content.
Well, they actually wrote a whole script. The actual novel that is based on their script and not the script of the actual film that was released.
I knew that the novelization was different in some aspects from the film. I haven't read the novelization. I didn't realize that was why. That makes perfect sense.
So
so they produced their script.
Hank Shiv, I think that's his name. I haven't got it handy. He wrote the novel of this. He also wrote the novel to Jaws of Revenge. Both are really great books. So in Jaws, the original novel, there's this whole underlining story about the mafia and the reason why the mayor doesn't want the beaches to close in the original Jaws is because he's borrowed money from the mafia and they're relying on the tourist takeover so he can pay off the mafia. And that's the reason why he doesn't want the beaches to close. So when it came to writing the sequel, that director wanted to lean into that storyline that wasn't used in the original movie. So their script consisted of going back to the mafia storyline. There's a whole new holiday village built on Amity. And basically, once again, they don't want it to close down because they own the mafia all this money. So they kind of like lean into that storyline. So in their version of Jaws 2, Amity Island is basically barren. It's all the shops are closed down, signs up everywhere saying that don't go tourists on, don't come visit this island, there's shark attacks. So basically it's it hasn't recovered from the first movie.
Yeah.
And that's what they went into production. But the island of Martha's Vineyard did not like that story.
Yeah.
So they were like, lots of local businesses refused to have their shops builded up and stuff to look like they were run down and this Amity Island. So they didn't, and because of how long Jaws took to make, they didn't want, a lot of local people that live on Martha's Vineyard, where Jaws is filmed, didn't want Universal back there. So there was protests outside saying,
I read they had like t-shirts saying Universal go home,
you're Universal.
Yeah.
Amity Island, it's filmed in Martha's Vineyard in a small town called Egdertown. It's a beautiful, beautiful town. I've visited it a few times. It still looks today how it looks in this movie. When Chief Brody walks up and down those streets, it looks like he's just walking up and down Martha's Vineyard. It hasn't changed. The buildings haven't changed. The shop fronts have changed. But you can walk past, and me and my husband have done the Jaws tour on there a few times, and all the buildings are exactly the same. You can see, if you're a Jaws fan, you should really go there and do it. It's great fun. But Claire, sorry, go back to what you're saying.
That's fine. I found that quite interesting. So they had their original script. They worked on the movie. I think they were in production for about 18 months. But there was friction because the chairman of MCA, which was the company that had released the soundtracks for all the two movies so far, and they also went on to produce Jaws 3, and they kind of got amalgamated into Universal Studios eventually. Their chairman, Sid Sheinberg, was married to Lorraine Gary.
Yeah.
He wanted her to feature more prominently in this movie, but Hancock and Tristan didn't. So they still turned in their scripts where she didn't feature so heavily, which didn't go down very well with the studio. And then Hancock also fired one of the actresses from set without realizing that she was the girlfriend of another executive from MCA. So basically, between all of that and the unrest with the local residents, he got fired and his wife with him. So off they went, and in came Gino Svok, who done a few movies. He hadn't done a great deal prior to this, but since this, he has. He directed Supergirl. He directed Santa Claus the movie, which are both movies that I love.
I love those movies.
I love those movies. And he did. He's done a lot of TV work, all the way up through to from Ironside back in the 70s through to things like Smallville, Heroes, Supernatural, Bones, Grey's Anatomy. He's been quite prolific, particularly in TV. But this was one of his earlier movies, and this is probably one of his more well-known ones.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, here's the thing. We're doing this movie under the banner of Unloved Sequels.
Yeah.
I am aware. I know you're going to be aware, and probably quite a lot of our listeners are going to be aware that this movie is widely regarded as the better of the three Jaws sequels.
Yeah.
It's got 61% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not bad. Obviously, in comparison, I realise that's quite a drop because Jaws has a 97% rating, but I think that's exceptional. 61 is not bad. It's generally regarded as a good film and a good sequel. So how come we're covering it? How does this qualify?
I think when you start looking at sequels to movies, I think when you sit down and watch Jaws as a movie, when a lot of people wrap that movie up and they go, this is one of the greatest movies of all time. And if you look at it at that content, does Jaws need a sequel? No. So you've got two kind of Jaws fans. You've got the hardcore Jaws fans that think Jaws is perfect movie magic, Hollywood at its best. It cannot approve of that, and it cannot get any better than that. Then you've got another bunch of Jaws fans that will watch anything that freaking shark has been stuck on. And I'm one of the latters. And when I first came up with...
You definitely are.
I am. I'm like, anything that's Jaws is stuck on. Sneakers, paper cups, T-shirts. I've got them. I'm actually wearing a Jaws T-shirt now.
Of course you are.
For me, it captures an era of Hollywood. And I think it does really well. When I came up with this idea of this podcast, and I just sat down and discussed it with you, whether we should do a movie podcast about unloved sequels that both people don't talk about a lot, there was two movies that came to mind. One was this one, Jaws 2, because people know it exists, and people probably haven't really watched it. They might watch Jaws 1,000 times, but only really watched Jaws 2 once or twice. But also like other sequels, like another great sequel that's linked to an iconic movie, what reminds me a lot of Jaws 2, is Psycho 2, is an amazing movie. If Jaws 2 was made of its own entity and wasn't a sequel to Jaws and was just a shark movie and Chief Brody wasn't in it and that was the only link in comparison, this film would be regarded as a really good shark, man against nature kind of thriller, horror film.
Yeah.
Because it's linked to Jaws, it gets a hard slot, if you know what I mean. I think because...
It's stuck in the shadow.
Yeah. Because it's so heavily sandwiched between Jaws, what's iconic, and Jaws 3 and 4, what are trashy sequels. I still love them, but they are trashy sequels. This film gets a hard place to sit. Because this is actually a really good movie. Like, the cast is great. The younger cast are great. The underwater cinematography is beautiful in this film. John Williams does an amazing job reinventing his iconic Jaws soundtrack. And you never hear the music from Jaws 2 anyway. You hear Jaws, and the music from Jaws was repeated in remastered and redone by different composers for Jaws 3 and 4. But Jaws 2, that lovely jingle it has when they're out on their boats and the fun music sitting in.
Yeah.
Beautiful soundtrack, but it doesn't get enough praise. The cast is great in this. I think the fact that Roy Scheider was slightly unhinged when he made this, I think came across really well in his portrayal of Chief Brody this time. Like, there was a famous thing that he had a mental breakdown and trashed a hotel room in Beverly Hills just to try to get out of this contract. And
yeah.
I think it's a clever movie. Like, Jaws was originally such a man versus nature thriller. A lot of people put Jaws in the horror section genre of movies. I don't put Jaws there. I put Jaws in the thriller. I put this as a horror.
Agreed.
This is leaning into the whole late 70s Friday the 13th kind of the slasher series. This is like the shark is like a serial killer in this. He's like a Jason. This is where the shark takes on the entity of Jason and Freddy, and you know, he starts having a character of his own.
Yeah.
And I do think
I completely get that. You said that to me earlier when I was watching, because I watched the movie this afternoon. I was supposed to watch it a couple of weeks ago and I couldn't because I've had broadband issues at home, which is very boring. And then I went on holiday and I couldn't because I was in a caravan with no internet. And then so I've had to kind of cram watch it today before we recorded, and I was watching it thinking, actually, I'm quite glad that I didn't watch this either just before or whilst I was on my beach holiday with my children. So it's probably quite good, although I had to cram it today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching it. I was like, yeah, no, I'm quite glad that I didn't watch that. I'm a bit of a nervous about the sea. Anyway, my kids are like, can we go and swim in the sea? I'm like, no, because I can't swim well enough to save you if you die. And then I watched Jaws and Jaws 2, and I'm like, we're never going in the ocean again.
Take their little floaties
out. But you said this, as I was watching it, you were texting me and talking about this kind of thing of the second movie being more like a slasher. Yeah. And I completely see it. And you've got your teenage cast, and it actually, even though it came before a lot of those slasher cliches, it still conforms to a lot of them. 100%. You've got your teenagers out breaking the rules, having fun. I'm grounded, but I'm going to go out on the boat anyway. Yeah. As soon as anyone gets smoochy, a shark comes and eats them.
Yeah.
It's like the rules list from Scream.
It is. You know, 100%.
You don't go off anywhere on your own. Don't have sex. I mean, they didn't actually have sex in this movie as far as we could see, but they were gonna, and then he got eaten by a shark. Oh. You know, it's...
That death scene.
I found that a really interesting take.
Tina, and what was the guy called? Oh, the one
I can't remember. I just watched it today. But I know the scene you're talking about. And then she ends up hiding in the boat.
Such a funny scene, because the actor who played the boy in it, he took the job because everybody was like, you're going to be the sequel to Jaws. And he was like, oh my God, that'd be amazing. But he didn't tell the director he couldn't swim. So they kind of like rode him out.
It's just like when people say they put horse riding on their resume. Like, yeah, I can ride a horse.
Yeah.
I can juggle. I can breathe fire. Oh, you want me to do it now?
And they just... They just basically went out into the middle of the ocean and threw him out there. And that whole scene is one of the most terrifying scenes in any Jaws film, because the fear on his face is the fact that he thought, fuck, I might drown or get stuck. Because I was watching it with my husband, and I was sitting there going, not only is this terrifying, this animatronic shark coming towards you in this kind of like Florida water, because most of Jaws 2 was filmed in Florida, most of the ocean scene, because it was warmer down there, they filmed down in Florida. But could you imagine, underneath that ocean, they didn't have like CGI sharks back then. They had these animatronic sharks that are on these ginormous cranes being dragged through the water. Can you imagine, you're thinking, I'm about to be attacked by this big shark. Can you imagine if you got your foot caught in one of these animatronic things? It would have been absolutely terrifying, just have this ginormous robotic object just heading towards you, and the fact that you can't swim at the same time must have been horrible.
Mm-hmm. So the character's name was Eddie.
Swim, Eddie, and... swim.
Yeah. Swim faster.
And then first of all, she's in the boat, and she's safe. She's like, Eddie, help me. And you're like, you're in the boat, love. You might be being dragged.
Yeah,
by
you're
the...
all right, babe.
He's in the water with the shark.
You just sit tight. You're okay.
But also, what's a fun thing is, this is the first Hollywood sequel to actually have a 2 in the title. Do you know?
Yes.
And it's the first time they actually used the number. What's quite interesting.
The number 2. I think there were a couple of British films that had used it before. I can't remember what they are. But this was the first one in Hollywood that used the number 2 rather than the Roman numerals.
And also, like you said at the beginning of this podcast, the tagline from this film has become so iconic with Jaws, like, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. Like, that is so iconic now that...
It is. And I have to admit, this is one that, if you said it to me and said, what movie is it from? I would have said probably a Jaws film. And then I would have given it some thought and gone, okay, well, logic says Jaws 2.
Yeah.
Because it's talking about going back in the water. But I wouldn't have known. Like, the quote is almost bigger than the movie now.
Yes, 100%.
Because it's become so iconic.
Yeah, like they went over the top with this. Like, the first film, because it was such a sleeper hit and no one knew how big it was going to be, is not only did they roll this out to every single movie theater in America at the same time, but they also had merchandising. They had sponsorship for this, what the first film never had.
Mm.
So all those Jaws products we see now for the first movie, they never existed originally when the film came out, but Jaws 2 had all of that stuff. So you had products and sets of trading cards. They had Jaws bread. They had paper cups. They had some Coca-Cola.
Hang on. Did you just say Jaws bread?
They had a Jaws bread. Baker's
They're
bread.
They're making your sandwiches with.
Yeah.
How was that? Like, was it shaped like a shark, or did they just put a picture of Jaws on the
they
bag?
They probably put a picture of Jaws on the bag. That usually what happens now.
And
they
called it Jaws bread.
Bread, yeah.
Wow.
Take a big bite.
Okay.
They had beach towels, souvenir programs, shark
beach towels. There's some irony.
But they also did shark tooth necklaces. I'm hoping they actually used fake teeth for this and didn't go around killing all these other little
sharks. It was the 70s. They probably didn't, to be fair.
They probably just killed
real animal sharks. Rights weren't really such a big thing in the 70s, true. Unfortunately.
Colouring books, activity books, and a model kit of Brody's truck.
Something for the kids.
For kids. But this film was a PG.
I know. I saw that at the end.
So was the original. Came up. Would you show this to your child today?
Is this a PG? No. No. But then you have to bear in mind, I don't really know how the American classifications have gone, but like certainly over here, 70s, it was PG or 15.
Well, then they had ours.
And I guess they
had ours back then. They had ours. They were very rarely given out because it really consisted of having come kind of like nudity or pornography in it for it to get an R, but this film nearly got an R. So they did a cut of this movie when a lot of those surviving characters actually died. Some of the more of those teens die, and then the board of certification said, "You want this to be a PG? You need to trim off some of those death scenes." So they had to actually go back and film some stuff on Amity, and when they went back and filmed some of the stuff, fall had already happened. But the film's based in summer, so they had to stick paper, green papered leaves on the trees to make it look like it was summer still, when it was actually the height of winter there.
Oh, yeah, no, I did read that. And they had to suck on ice cubes before takes so that their breath wouldn't be visible in the cold.
Crazy.
Yeah.
What do you like about this movie, Claire?
Well, do you know what? I think, like you said, I think the performances are really good. I like that they handed the movie over to the next generation. I like that they didn't try to replicate Jaws. It felt like a valid continuation of the story.
Yeah.
It was a little bit weird for me because I have done a double bill in one day.
Yeah.
Because I did a rewatch of Jaws just to get, because it's so long since I'd seen the original from start to finish. I've seen like snippets of it when it's, you know, when you're channel hopping, you go, oh, Jaws is on.
These Jaws movies should not be watched back to back because they have
no continuous this now. Yeah.
The age gap between the kids don't work out.
So this was one of the things. The first thing I wrote down, actually, quite early on in the movie was, what is the timeline on this movie? And I did a bit of Googling and researching while I was watching. And it 4 years have passed in universe. And actually, it's been 3 years in real life. So that kind of marries up. But then I was like, how many kids did they... Like, I literally just watched the first movie and I don't remember them having children of the right age to be these two kids that they have now. No. So the kid that got attacked in the pond in Michael. The first movie is the older brother.
Yeah.
And the younger brother, Sean, was a toddler. And so just kind of presumably running around. I don't really remember him so much. Well,
he's kind of like just in the background. But when you watch Jaws 2, their age gap is far bigger than it was in Jaws 1.
Yeah. Like, so I was like, okay, well, they specifically say that Michael is 17. So he would have been 13 in the first movie, which I'm not convinced he was 13 in the first movie. I would have said younger than that, but okay. But then if Sean was a toddler in the first movie, he can't be more than about 7 or 8 if 4 years have passed.
Yeah.
And I have a 7-year-old who's about to turn 8, and that is not, they don't compare. So,
no.
Yeah, I did find that a bit confusing. But I guess the thing is, in the 70s, there was no home release.
No.
You saw it in the movie cinema, and then if it was on telly, you would have a chance to see it again. But you would not have a chance to see these two movies back to back.
No.
So you wouldn't have, your brain wouldn't be going, but I've just watched this and that doesn't add up because...
Because there was no way of them watching it.
They wouldn't have been thinking, well, in 40 years' time, someone might watch these two movies back to back and pick up on the fact that the age differences don't quite marry. They won't have been thinking that way because they wouldn't have imagined that the movie watching experience would be where it is now. So I forgive them that, but it took me a little while to kind of get my brain into that mindset of, because I'm a bit of a continuity nerd, and I was a bit like, but it doesn't make sense. I don't understand. And then
Claire
does
like a timeline. She will look up
I do.
What age this movie's
made. It's only really when I'm watching movies for this that I don't sit on IMDb. Like in the movie theater, I don't. Not acceptable. At home, if I'm watching a movie at home, I am quite often to be found on that movie's IMDb page, checking out who that person is, what else I've seen them in, and what the trivia is, and all that nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
While I'm watching the movie, it drives my husband nuts. And there were some very 70s elements to this movie, particularly, and I noticed it more in the second one than in the first one. There was a very gratuitous close up on some bottoms at one point in one of the beaches.
Oh, there's lots. This film's very horny. Yeah.
There's a lot of bikini shots. And
Those teenage boys are always like, especially when they talk, and the way they talk about girls in this movie, I was a bit like,
Do you know what? There's one of the guys says quite early on about, oh, she's got tits like a sparrow or something, which apparently was an improvised line. And to be fair, the actress who it was said about forgave the actor who said it.
Yeah.
But he has gone on record as saying, like, as soon as the words left my mouth, I regretted them. To be honest, I don't even understand what that means. Tits like each tit is like a sparrow, or tits like a sparrow's tits? Do sparrows have tits?
I think they're kind of like small and pointy, like two little sparrows on a fence. That's what I would think.
Oh, what, like little beaks?
Like little beaks, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, either way, it's not a compliment, is it? If someone says you've got tits like a sparrow, that's not a nice thing to say about them. So, and he did regret saying it. And they kept it in the movie.
But that works quite well in that scene, because he's jealous because he's not paying attention to him, who's a big businessman's son, or the mayor's son. It's the mayor's son, isn't it? He's not paying attention to him. Yeah. He's interested in Chief Brody's son, who's just the local sheriff. I'm like, why isn't I'm the mayor's
yeah,
son?
Yeah, yeah.
Why I'm the celebrity here? Why are you not interested in me? So it's like it works really well for his character to be like that. It's like, you know, he's just putting her down because he's jealous.
And there was a lot of that thing that you quite often get in movies that feature teenagers, of like, why are all these teenagers in a bar? This is what I don't like. They said explicitly he's 17.
Yeah,
he's the sheriff's son. Everyone knows him. Mm-hmm. Like, what is he doing in a bar?
Well, I don't think they might just be drinking sodas. You're allowed to drink in a bar as long as you're not drinking sodas. You don't have to deny it.
Really?
Yeah, you can just sit in a bar. Kids go to bars.
Does that happen in America, though?
Well, in England, you have them in pubs. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is we're British and, like, drinking is like a national sport. And also, It's true. But also because the legal age to buy alcohol here is lower. So, I was in the pub at 17, but you can buy your alcohol legally at 18. I could easily pass for 18 at 17. Yeah. I'm not sure I could pass for 21, and certainly a lot of 17-year-olds can't pass for 21.
I just thought they were in a local bar that was serving them soda pop.
I didn't even think that was a thing. Like, I know over here, like, a group of teenagers might just pop into the pub and get a soda pop, although they wouldn't, they'd be having a snake bite in black with a fake ID that
okay, because we have got a majority of our listeners are American, Claire. Could you now explain to people what a snake bite
is? Do I need to explain snake bite in black?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, don't do it, kids. Don't do it. I used to work in a pub, and there was always, and I don't know if it was ever really the law, or if it was just an urban legend that people would just say, we're not allowed, it's against the law to make a snake bite in black because you're mixing.
I remember.
You have to give you a half of lager and a half of cider. And if you put them in a glass together while I'm not looking, that's up to you. Anyway, it's a pint glass. And into that pint glass, you put half a pint of lager and half a pint of cider. And then you pour in some blackcurrant cordial, because otherwise it tastes like crap. And even with the cordial in, it kind of tastes like crap. And it gets you really drunk. Really, it's a really cheap way of getting drunk, so and it's quite a popular student drink.
And that's how I met Claire.
And that's, yes. So for the record, he was drinking the snake bite in black. I was serving the snake bite in black and refusing to mix them in a glass. Just going to give you a pint glass with a half of lager in, and there's your cider, and I'll put the blackcurrant in the cider, and what you do over there is your business.
Exactly. I used to love a snake bite.
British drinking culture.
Get wankered really quickly. It's fine going down. It's just after about 8 when it comes back up, it burns.
Anyway, don't do it, kids. Just say no.
All right, back to Jaws 2. One thing I really liked about this movie is the amount of to try to make Florida look like New England. Now, New England doesn't really have golden sand beaches like Florida does. But the fact that white lighthouse that they have in this movie, that ginormous lighthouse that they use quite a few times, like meet you at the lighthouse and let's run around the lighthouse where the dead killer whale is. They built that down in Florida, a whole lighthouse. I did not note this, but for years, I used to go to Martha's Vineyard and go looking for this lighthouse, not knowing it was not built.
And it wasn't there. It didn't exist.
It was made from stone, styrofoam, and down in Florida. So to try to make it was very sad, but that's an interesting fact. And also another little fact I like about this film, the director really wanted this view of what the shark was attacking people. And he spent months trying to figure out how to get this shark attacking. And he actually fired a cameraman because he couldn't get the angle of what the shark of the water coming in. And it took a really unknown cameraman that didn't have any idea what he was doing. He came to, and then one day the cameraman just went, let's just put a horse saddle on the back of the shark and ride it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's one of my favourite scenes in this film.
Can you imagine?
Just jiggling along on this ginormous shark.
She's riding. Woohoo! For the benefit of our listeners, because I realised that we both just sat and chuckled and didn't really say anything. We're both on Zoom to each other, miming riding a shark like a horse. And chuckling at the idea of riding a shark like a horse. These days, if they made that film now, there would have then been someone else filming him to put it in the special features. But
There is pictures out there.
We're going to look it up. We'll put it on the socials for you to watch, guys. Probably not as cute an image as I've got in my mind. In my mind, it's a bit like when my kids are pretending to ride horses around the house, but it was probably a bit more vicious than that. In real life.
I'm putting it going at quite a speed as well, just kind of like on this animatronic shark. But now, if this film was made, there wouldn't be an animatronic shark, it would just be
CGI. A ping pong ball on a stick and CGI, and it would look crap. This is one of the things I love about this movie, and it because we see the shark more, it's not as mind blowing as it is in the first one, But even still, and I know I was very rude and unkind at the beginning about the eye of the shark in the final scene. But that was the one moment that it caught my eye of like, that looks a bit weird. Partly because I think for most of the movie, the practical effect of the shark is pretty good. You know, we're going back more than 45 years now since they made this movie. To achieve all of that with practical effects, like you said, if they were doing it now, they wouldn't even bother trying. It would all be done with CGI and green screen. And the fact that they did it with practicals, and it holds up. A lot of special effects from the 70s and 80s, and even more recently than that, you watch and you go, ooh, that's not aged well. But actually, I think this probably looks as good now as it did then.
No, I think it did. Like you can tell the fear in some of those kids' faces. You could tell they were uncomfortable. Like that girl who's screaming, blood-curdling screaming. I watch it and I'm always like, and one of the most haunting death scenes is when Sean drops in the water and then the young girl jumps in and the shark just comes up and swallows her whole. And he goes, I can't get up. As a kid, when I watched that film, that haunted me. You didn't see anything.
Well, this is why you shouldn't watch it as a kid, because it shouldn't be a PG.
Can we show it to Charlie one day?
No. Like one day, yes. Maybe in like 8 years. He's 7 now, so yeah.
Give it a few years. I think I must have watched this about 8 or 10.
And see how you turned out.
Oh, whoa. Parenting skills from
Claire. This is not a kid's movie. This is not a kid's movie. I know it's rated as a PG, and we've talked about that.
Back then it was seen as a kid's movie. Now it's not.
Clearly, like you say, they will have made edits to it. Kids were a lot tougher in the 70s, though, weren't they? There wasn't as much of a market for the child audience, for the young audience. It was family films rather than children's films, whereas these days everything is very sanitized and very, like, most of the movies my kids watch are animated, and the ones that aren't are very they're very safe for young kids. Part of the reason for that is that I also have a 4-year-old, and so there's stuff that my older child doesn't watch because it wouldn't be suitable for her, and maybe he would. He's just starting to get to the stage where he's kind of staying up late and watching stuff that's a bit more grown up, but he's still very unsure about what he finds scary and what he doesn't. And he would find this scary. There were moments when I found it scary. I mean, the anxiety I had, I mean, going back to watching the first movie, even more so because of the suspense. Every time I watch that scene on the beach where Brody's just sitting there, and it's like Final Destination. It's like, I mean, it's not like Final Destination. I guess Final Destination is like this because this came so far before. But it is just that thing of like, do you know what it's like? Going back to my my caravan holiday in Devon, I did a water safety training session with my kids, and which was really good, actually, run by like one of the local lifeguards.
But isn't there great whites in Devon now? Haven't the coast of Britain now witnessed great whites?
Do you know what? There was a shark attack. I don't think it was Devon. There was a shark attack quite recently in the news, but it was only a graze. She was fine. But also that only happens if you go. I mean, this is the thing that, you know, these movies are not realistic.
Yeah.
These Jaws movies. It would not happen this way. But anyway, in this water safety session I did with my kids, the lifeguard gave us these pictures of like, here's a scene at the beach, here's a scene by the river, here's a scene at the wherever else that there's like a pond or places with water. And you had to spot the hazards. And my kids were getting properly into it and like, oh, they're not wearing a life jacket. That person's riding their bike next to the river. That person's about to jump off the bridge. That person's not looking where they're going when they're rowing their boat. And all of this, and that scene is like that for me. And you can see Brody just like watching, and like every time there's a scream, oh no, it's kids playing, it's fine. And there's, you know, a bit of horseplay in the water. Oh no, it's okay, it's fine. And my anxiety, every time I watch that scene, I feel it rising because they've set it so well for you.
Yeah.
And it's the same a little bit in this movie, less so because you don't have the suspense because you see the shark earlier on. But it is a suspenseful movie. And like you were saying about it being like the slasher version of Jaws.
Yes.
You find yourself sitting there going, okay, where's it going to be? Because we haven't seen it for 5 minutes. We haven't seen it for 10 minutes. This is the scene.
Snog on the open fire pit in a Friday the 13th movie. You're like, don't get comfortable. These people are comfortable. Yeah. There's going to be Jason's going to appear out of nowhere with a big meat cleaver. And this one, it's like, you know, the shark's going to pop up.
It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same. This is the point at which the killer's going to jump out with a knife and stab you, except that the killer is a shark with teeth. It's not a kids' movie. It's not a kids' movie. Don't let your kids watch.
One thing
this
also
movie.
That make this film so iconic is that people who hadn't even seen Jaws 2, this probably has the most iconic death scene in a Jaws movie, mainly due to the Jaws ride. That doesn't exist in Universal anymore, but is really iconic.
Mm,
and also
R.I.P. Jaws ride.
And also but the Jaws ride, it still exists in Japan, so we can go to Japan and ride it. But the whole end of the Jaws ride is the shark gets electrocuted, like in this movie. So it's still one of the most iconic deaths in it that they carried on using within their theme parks afterwards compared to all the other movies and the other death scenes.
Well, because it's probably easier to electrocute a fake electrocute a fake shark in a ride than it would be to blow up.
They did, Well, originally the ride was to blow up the shark, and it opened up for like 6 months, but it kept breaking, so they closed it down and remodeled it.
Yeah, because they were blowing it up every day.
I can imagine
that was a good ride. I enjoyed going on that ride.
It's a great ride. So, Claire, how many Bruce sharks would you give Jaws to?
Do you know, as I was watching, I was thinking it's a 3 out of 5 movie. And then I've had a bit of time to reflect. And actually, I think it is better than that. I think the more I think about what you said about if it was the standalone movie or if it was the first one in the franchise, if the baseline wasn't Jaws.
Yeah.
How would you regard this movie? And I think it would be a 4 out of 5. It's not a perfect movie. No. Jaws would be the 5 out of 5. But if we take Jaws out of the equation and pretend it never existed, I think this would be a really solid 4 out of 5 movie. I think it works as a movie in its own right. Yeah. I think it works as a sequel. They've brought enough of the original through without it being a complete rehash.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 out of 5 for me. How about you?
I'm on the same page. I think it's a definitely 4 out of 5. I think it's iconic. I think it's a prime example of an unloved sequel that deserves a lot more praise. I think that it's had a bad stick over the years. I think it's a fantastic movie. I think with all the production problems it had over the time of filming and going in production, and really in the right world, it shouldn't exist because Jaws is so iconic. Jaws doesn't need a sequel, but we have a sequel, and the sequel is a good sequel. It's such a good movie. It's high intention. They bought the similarities of the original movie, but gave it a breath of fresh air. They made a horror film. They didn't just try to rehash the same thing. They could have gone off on another shark hunt with, you know, waited for Richard Dreyfuss to come available again and do the same thing again, and they didn't. I really like this movie. I am a Jaws fan, and I do like 3 and 4, but in the ideal world, they should have stopped after 2. Maybe one day we'll cover 3 and 4.
So are you saying that I shouldn't, because I haven't seen 3 and 4. Are you saying I shouldn't?
Oh, it's like, such a difficult thing.
Is my Jaws experience complete?
I think if you lived in a normal world, I think it should be complete. But because you are the co-host of this podcast, your world of Jaws has not ended
this
yet.
This is not a normal world.
No, this is not a normal world. So I think I will give you a couple of months break, and I think we'll be back with Jaws 3. But I think...
there's a promise.
Problem with Jaws 3 is Jaws 3 was made... It was a 3D movie. It came out in the early 80s when 3D was having a big craze again, and anything that was the third chapter in anything, it was made with 3. If you watch Jaws 3D in 2D, it is shit. If you watch it in real 3D, it's so good. So somehow we're going to have to find
when
a way.
When you say real 3D, do you mean like the 80s red lens, green lens type 3D, which is what it would have been made in at the time? Or has it been mastered now into contemporary 3D?
It's been remastered in contemporary 3D on the Blu-ray.
Ooh, that will give me motion sickness.
Yeah, so it's an experience.
I'll give it a go.
We'll have to figure out a way how to get you to see it in 3D. But guys, mid-September, beginning of September, I think the first week in September, Jaws is going back into the IMAX in 3D, apparently. So at the moment, they've remastered it. They haven't CGI'd the shark. It's still the same old shark, what is great. But you can go and see Jaws in 3D in the IMAX beginning of September. Now, the 3D aspect of it is up in the air, because when they released the news, all the news websites and movies and stuff say it was in 3D. And recently they stopped quoting the 3D aspect of it, because E.T. has come out for August and it's in the IMAX and it's been reformatted for IMAX viewing, and that's not in 3D. So I don't know if it's going to be in 3D or not, but go and see Jaws in the IMAX. Honestly, if you've got a kid...
Will you be sad if I go without you?
No, go. Who are you going to go with?
Well, I don't know. I'll need to find another movie friend. You're my movie friend. I have other friends. They're just not as geeky about movies as you are.
Well, I'm going to be in Austin, Texas when that comes out. So I'm going to go and see it in Texas with some proper, like, proper Americans. So so that should be fun for me.
I'll look it up and I'll find a movie friend who wants to come and see it with me.
Yes.
Hey, no. You never know. Maybe my husband will come and watch a film with me at the cinema. He won't. We still haven't seen Maverick.
No, I can't believe you haven't seen Top Gun Maverick yet. Such
can't you?
Well,
anyway. So that's Jaws 2 for you. Listeners, tell us what you thought of the movie. You can leave us a comment, email us on unlovedsequels@gmail.com, and find us on all the socials at unlovedsequels.
Guys, also subscribe, review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts. But until next time, guys, keep watching those sequels and let us know what else you want to see. But until next time, keep watching the screen.